This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 587 of the genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. In Gaza, Israel has accelerated its attacks on Palestinians, massacring dozens of people each day in tent shelters, in schools turned into housing for displaced families, in residential buildings, and inside two hospitals. U.S. President Donald Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, said he is hopeful that a ceasefire deal can be reached after yet more talks in Doha with Qatari officials, but of course no further details have been revealed. However, Israeli Prime Minister and war crimes fugitive Benjamin Netanyahu declared that even if captured Israeli soldiers are released under the terms of a ceasefire, he is still intent on escalating attacks and, quote, destroying Hamas. He said, quote, "We'll take them," meaning the Israeli captives, "and then we'll go in. There will be no way we will stop the war." Netanyahu boasted to lawmakers in the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee that the Israeli army is, quote, "destroying more and more houses in Gaza," and that Palestinians have nowhere to return. "The only obvious result will be Gazans choosing to emigrate outside of the Strip," Netanyahu continued, "but our main problem is finding countries to take them in." Since Israel broke the ceasefire on March 18th, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says that more than 2,800 Palestinians have been killed and nearly 8,000 have been injured. The ministry states that as of May 14th, approximately 53,000 Palestinians have been killed since October 7th, 2023, with thousands more missing and buried under the rubble. At least 100 people have been killed in airstrikes on homes and tent shelters since dawn in Jabalia, Khan Yunis, Maghazi refugee camp, and Al Mawasi. On Wednesday, May 14th, the Israeli army spokesperson issued forced displacement orders for Palestinians in Gaza City, including yet another order to empty Al-Shifa Hospital. The spokesperson said the military planned to attack, quote, "with great force." The Israeli military had already killed more than 80 Palestinians since dawn on Wednesday, including approximately 50 killed in Jabalia in northern Gaza. Al Jazeera's reporter Tarek Abu Azoum stated that airstrikes targeted five residential buildings packed with civilians in Jabalia and the Jabalia refugee camp. Quote, "Civil defense teams reported that the scene of the attack was horrific. First-hand accounts say the Israeli army launched consecutive strikes without any prior warning and that many of the victims remain under the rubble. We continue to get testimonies saying the morgue of the Indonesian hospital has been flooded with bodies," Abu Azoum stated. Mohamed Awad, an emergency doctor in the Indonesian hospital, told Agence France-Presse that supply shortages meant his department could not properly handle the flow of wounded and that the, quote, "bodies of the martyrs are lying on the ground in the hospital corridors. There are not enough beds, no medicine, and no means for surgical or medical treatment, which leaves doctors unable to save many of the injured who are dying due to lack of care," he said. Jabalia has been under heavy bombardment all week. On Friday, May 9th, a United Nations aid distribution center that had also been sheltering displaced families was attacked, killing at least four Palestinians. On May 11th, Israel bombed the Fatima Bani Assad school that has been sheltering displaced families, killing at least 15 people. Journalist Mahmoud Abu Salama reported from the scene. He said that the Israeli military bombed the school, turning the site into widespread destruction. Quote, "displaced people were sleeping, holding on to the hope of a ceasefire agreement, but Israeli airstrikes targeted them here without warning." Israeli gunboats fired on Gaza fishers on May 10th, injuring Palestinians trying to find any source of food for their families in the sea. On Tuesday, May 13th, Israel bombed two hospitals in Khan Yunis in the south, the European Gaza Hospital, and the Nasser Medical Complex. Israel used bunker buster bombs and fire belts on the European Gaza Hospital, killing at least 28 Palestinians and wounding dozens in multiple strikes. Israeli media claimed without evidence that there were tunnels under the hospital and that Mohammed Sinwar, the military commander of the Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, was the target of the attack. CCTV footage obtained by Al Jazeera showed the moment Israel bombed the courtyard of the hospital. Journalist Moaz Toha spoke to hospital staff and medical workers who showed massive pieces of shrapnel that tore through the facility. Both hospital staff and medical workers described shrapnel and the bombing ripping through emergency areas and damaging parts of the building. At least 6 people were martyred and more than 40 others injured. Attacks on the European Gaza Hospital continued on Wednesday, May 14th. 6 consecutive airstrikes hit areas around the hospital compound, targeting a bulldozer that was working to clear rubble and recover bodies underneath from Tuesday's attacks. A doctor at the European Gaza Hospital, Adnan Issa, recorded this voice message for logistics coordinator Afif Nesouli, who works with the medical group GLIA in Gaza. Adnan Issa says that there was continuous bombing.
I'm stuck in the hospital right now, and really the situation is very bad, bad, bad. It's so bad. And really pray for me. And oh my God, a lot of bombing around my hospital and in my hospital. And that's very terrible thing.
As of today, Thursday, the European Gaza Hospital has been forced to close completely. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says that Israel's attacks caused significant damage to infrastructure, including sewage lines, damage to internal departments, and destruction of roads leading to the hospital. Nasser Medical Complex, also in Khan Yunis, was bombed in the pre-dawn hours on Tuesday, May 13th, killing 2 Palestinians. 18 hospital beds in the surgical department, 8 beds in the intensive care unit, and 10 inpatient beds were also destroyed, according to medical sources. The attack was a targeted assassination of journalist Hassan Asleya, who was a contributor to local and international news outlets and was a prominent reporter in Gaza. Dropsite News says that Asleya's footage of airstrikes, raids, and the aftermath of civilian massacres was used by AP, CNN, Getty, Sky News, and the New York Times. In early April, Asleya was the intended target of a drone strike on a media tent outside the hospital. The strike killed reporter Ahmed Mansour, who was captured on video sitting in a chair with his head and chest on fire. Mansour died a few days later while receiving treatment in the intensive care unit. The Israeli army had accused Asleya of being affiliated with Hamas's armed wing and claimed that he had participated in the October 7th operation. Asleya, who was severely injured in the attack on the media tent, told Mondo Weiss 2 days after the attacks on April 9th that, quote, "the occupation is trying to obliterate the image of Palestinian journalists with these false claims that they belong to Hamas and other factions." Anyone with even a passing knowledge of Hamas and how the Qassam Brigades operate will instantly recognize how utterly incoherent the Israeli army's claims are, noted Mondo Weiss contributor Tarek Hajjaj, who profiled Hassan Asleya. But Israel is counting on people's ignorance and gullibility to believe that a dedicated journalist who operates in the field 24/7 also moonlights as a Hamas fighter. Asleya knew there was a target on his back. He told Mondo Weiss that, quote, "it would not be difficult for the occupation to assassinate me again, especially with the increasing incitement I hear and see against me. They may target me inside the hospital, in this room of mine. What can I do? I am not fighting. I am working, and I bear responsibility for my profession," Hassan Asleya continued. "If the Israeli army kills me, the photos I took and the stories I told the world will live on. My name, my cause, and my voice will live on, and the occupation will die." Journalist Ahmed Al-Najjar reported from Nasser Hospital on Wednesday.
The burns department inside Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, but as you can see, it is completely destroyed because the Israeli occupation's warplanes bombed it over the night, killing and assassinating one prominent Palestinian journalist here. Our colleague Hassan Slayeh, one of the press prominent figures and pillars in the Gaza Strip, was assassinated here after almost over a month of another attempt of assassinating him right outside that hospital. It wasn't just Hassan who was receiving treatment here, it was him and dozens of the wounded people who sustained burns by the Israeli occupation's attack. And as you can see, everything here is destroyed. The beds, the medical equipment, everything here is destroyed following this lethal attack by the Israeli occupation, who continues to suppress and assassinate all those trying to show the truth and broadcast what is happening here to the world.
That was Ahmed Al-Najjar. The Gaza government media office says that Hassan Slayeh, assassinated in his hospital bed at Nasser Medical Complex, was the 215th journalist and media worker in Gaza killed since October 2023. Condolences and condemnations over Asleya's assassination poured in from all across Gaza and around the world. There was a massive funeral procession in the streets in Khan Yunis for Hassan Slayeh on Tuesday amidst the rubble. Also on Tuesday, Israeli forces shot and killed a 12-year-old boy, Mohammed al-Bardawil, in Al-Mawasi. The child, along with his father, Saeed, was an eyewitness to the massacre of paramedics and first responders in Rafah on March 23rd. As you'll remember, the Israeli army had ambushed a convoy of ambulances, executed the paramedics, and threw their bodies into a mass pit. They also buried the ambulances in the sand. The boy and his father were on their way to go fishing when they were detained by Israeli soldiers before the attack on March 23rd. And were subsequently abducted. They were interviewed by the New York Times for its investigation into the massacre. A second round of testimonies was scheduled for Mohammed al-Bardawil to assist in an international commission on war crimes, with testimonies and evidence submitted to the UN office and the South African legal team at the International Court of Justice. But he was killed before he was able to provide further eyewitness testimony. More than 70 days have passed since Israel closed all the crossings into Gaza, creating mass starvation and an engineered medical catastrophe for Gaza's 2 million Palestinians. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza stated on May 11th that there is now a dangerous acceleration of a severe shortage of pharmaceutical supplies and that 43% of essential medicines are at zero stock. 64% of medical supplies are at zero stock, and emergency, operating room, and intensive care units are operating on depleted stocks, with critical cases on the rise. Since the aid blockade began on March 2nd, 57 children have reportedly died from the effects of malnutrition, according to the Ministry of Health. This number is likely an underestimate and is expected to increase. A new alert published on May 12th by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, the global standard for assessing food insecurity, says that starvation has reached unprecedented levels. The entire population of Gaza is now classified in emergency, with more than 71,000 children aged 6 months to 5 years old suffering from acute malnutrition, including more than 14,000 severe cases. The situation is growing equally dire for pregnant and breastfeeding women, with an estimated 18,000 women expected to require urgent treatment to avoid life-threatening and irreversible health consequences for both mothers and infants. Euromed Human Rights Monitor says a silent death is sweeping through Gaza's community of elders as well. Now entering its third consecutive month, the intensified siege has had devastating and long-term effects, disproportionately harming Gaza's most vulnerable, Euromed says. Israel's systematic policy seeks to destroy all means of survival and eliminate any path to staying alive. This deepens the humanitarian catastrophe, making it a central instrument in the execution of genocidal policy. Over the past week, 14 elderly Palestinians were documented to have died across Gaza from complications related to hunger, malnutrition, and lack of medical care. These deaths are directly linked to Israel's complete closure of border crossings and its prevention of humanitarian aid and essential goods from entering the Strip since March 2nd, the rights group stated. A proposed Israeli-American mechanism for humanitarian aid in Gaza, Euromed added, is nothing more than a new maneuver aimed at prolonging the illegal and comprehensive blockade. It repackages the crime of starvation in a misleading humanitarian guise, falsely legitimizing its continued use as a weapon in the ongoing crime of genocide. The aid agency Oxfam said this week that, quote, Gaza's starvation is not incidental. It is deliberate, entirely engineered, and has now created the largest population facing starvation anywhere in the world, a preventable famine unfolding in real time. It is unconscionable and is being allowed to happen. Furthermore, Oxfam stated, quote, Israel's plan to militarize the delivery of humanitarian aid, an egregious violation of international humanitarian law, threatens to push this already catastrophic crisis into full collapse. Turning aid into a tool of control endangers civilians, erodes the neutrality of humanitarian work, and risks unleashing even greater chaos and suffering across Gaza. Early this morning, May 15th, Israeli forces killed two more journalists in airstrikes on Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. The Gaza government media office stated that Ahmed Anwar Abdelhadi Al-Helou, who worked as an editor for the Quds News Network, and Hassan Marzouk Samour, who worked as a broadcaster and presenter for Sawat Al-Aqsa Radio, were killed along with their families in separate bombings. After Hassan Asleh's assassination, the Gaza government media office says that 217 journalists and media workers have been killed since October 2023. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of A Long-Awaited Reunion in Amman by Khaled El-Hissi, writing from exile in Jordan. Khaled is one of our longtime contributors and is from Jabalia in northern Gaza. He has been receiving treatment for blood cancer in Amman, Jordan, for some time now and has written extensively about his friends and family in Gaza who have been killed or displaced. He wrote this week about meeting up with his good friend Abu Bakr Abed, who passed through Amman on his way to Ireland a few weeks ago. Khaled describes encountering Abu Bakr for the first time, both as university students at the Islamic University of Gaza in 2021, and how their friendship evolved and tightened over time, especially after the genocide began in 2023. Khaled writes that, quote, on April 17th, 2025, my sleep was fitful as my thoughts kept returning to my cousin Wasim El-Hissi, 10, who had been killed the day before when Israel bombed my cousin's family's home in Jabalia. Mohanned, 5, Khaula, 3, and Wasim were the children of my cousin Hamouda, a pet name for Muhammad. Mayar, just 2 months old, was the only daughter of my cousin Haitham. Israel killed them in an instant. My cousins later collected the remains of one of the children's intestines from a tree. After countless attempts at falling asleep, tossing in bed, staring at the ceiling, checking the time on my phone, moving to the couch, then back to bed again, I still couldn't quiet the jumble of thoughts crowding my mind. I was already exhausted. 2 days earlier, I had taken a dose of chemotherapy medication, and the side effects were brutal. I drifted off eventually, only to be woken at exactly 8:45 a.m. by two calls from a Jordanian number I didn't recognize. Half asleep, I squinted at the screen and muttered to myself, "Who's calling at this hour?" I didn't answer. I went back to sleep. I woke up around noon and decided to grab a falafel sandwich with some fava beans for breakfast from a nearby shop. At 1:20 p.m., while I was on my way, Abu Bakr messaged me, "Call me now, immediately." I thought something might have happened to him, or that he wanted to show me the field where he was working as a correspondent at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, as he often did. I tried calling, but the line didn't go through. A moment later, he called me instead. "How are you?" he asked. "I'm fine, but it's you who I should ask, how are you?" I replied. I want to tell you something, but promise me you'll keep it a secret. Promise me, Abu Bakr said. I promise, I replied. I'm in Amman. You're joking, Ya Rajul, I said, using the Arabic word for man, thinking he was messing with me. Wallahi, I'm not joking, he said, swearing by God. I'm really in Amman. Khalid writes that they immediately met up and had a tearful reunion. Abu Bakr tells him about the journey he took after leaving Gaza, the bus driving through historic Palestine, seeing it for the first time in his life. Abu Bakr, finishing his washing before prayers, tells Khalid, quote, I'd give everything up just to take that journey again, to see Palestine again. Our country is the most beautiful in the world, and that's exactly why they've stolen it. I'm telling you, Khalid, once I finish my treatment here, I'm going back to Gaza. We all need to go back. Our country needs us. I cut in, me too. As soon as I finish my treatment, I'm going back, just like you. Gaza needs us, and not just Gaza, Khalid, he smiled, gently correcting me. All of Palestine needs us. He looked at me, his voice steady. We, the youth, are the ones who will liberate this land. No one else will do it for us. It's on us to free Palestine. Those are excerpts from A Long-Awaited Reunion in Amman by Khalid El-Hissi on electronicintifada.net. Turning quickly to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces on Wednesday demolished more homes in the Nur Shams refugee camp in the northern city of Tul Karam as the military aggression on the camp entered the 95th day, according to local news. Wafa news agency said that Israeli bulldozers tore down residential buildings in the vicinity of the Abu Bakr as-Siddiq Mosque at a time when infantry soldiers deployed on a large scale and opened live ammunition at Palestinian civilians and even at media personnel. The Israeli soldiers obstructed residents from entering the refugee camp to retrieve their belongings before the demolition of their houses. Local estimates indicate that Israeli army bulldozers tore down 20 structures in the previous week, and the occupation troops blew up other residential structures whose owners were displaced. 2 weeks ago, on May 1st, Israeli occupying forces issued military orders to demolish 106 Palestinian-owned structures in Tul Karam and Nur Shams refugee camps, giving residents 24 hours to evacuate. In Jenin, also in the northern West Bank, Israeli forces have expanded its incursion into the Jenin refugee camp, going on 115 days. The Jenin municipality said that Israeli forces have completely demolished approximately 600 homes inside the camp, while the rest have been partially damaged and rendered uninhabitable. The occupation continues to fire live ammunition intensively in the camp, Wafa News Agency reported. 2 weeks ago, as we reported, the Jenin-based veteran journalist Ali Samoudi was arrested after Israeli soldiers raided his home, beat him, and took him to a military barracks. The 58-year-old reporter has now been sentenced by an Israeli military court to 6 months administrative detention, which is an arbitrary imprisonment without charge or trial, and he is currently in Megiddo prison. Administrative detention orders can, of course, be renewed indefinitely. Samoudi was working alongside Al Jazeera correspondent Shireen Abu Akleh when she was assassinated by an Israeli sniper in May 2022. He was also shot in the shoulder during that attack. CNN, which has worked with Samoudi over the years, stated that the Israeli military acknowledged that it does not have sufficient evidence to substantiate terrorism funding allegations it leveled against Samoudi, but the military court sentenced him anyway. The military's administrative detention order cites Samoudi's, quote, presence posing a danger to the security of the region as justification for his detention. He's one of 20 journalists detained and held under administrative detention since the start of the war on Gaza, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Society. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. Our longtime contributor, Mohammed Assad, an incredible photojournalist, recently posted images to his Instagram account. He says that after 2 months of Israel's forced starvation policy, he had no choice but to dive into the sea, trying to catch any fish to get a little protein for his children. He writes that even though he was forced to swim amongst raw sewage and evade Israeli naval ships that opened fire at fishers on the shore, as well as a quadcopter drone that bombed a fisher next to him, he returned with an octopus for his family. Mohammed says, quote, "I don't know if I should feel joy for bringing back this food or simply for surviving." Mahmoud Zouaiter, a prominent actor and comedian in Gaza, posted this last week. I'll narrate what he says after we play this short clip. That was Mahmoud Zouaiter. While walking and holding three blooming roses, he says, quote, "These were planted in Gaza, folks. Can you imagine? The owner of a shop stopped me and gave them to me. I told him that I was embarrassed to walk down the street with them, but he insisted that I take them because my birthday is coming up. They grew in Gaza. Do you see? God is good and generous. This rose is for you, from the inside of Gaza to you." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.